In 2018, Mark created Vancouver True Crime. It was recently renamed the Dark Mind Detective. Over the years, Mark has faced every type of abuse imaginable, including doxing, trolling, and death threats to his children from people who created posters and distributed them throughout his neighborhood. Of course, we know who they are, and this will not be forgotten but will be dealt with in due course. Mark has created a cybersecurity business called Hydra Shield. Unleash the Hydra Shield. Defend your digital realm against cyber monsters. Imagine a world where your online presence is guarded by a powerful Hydra Shield, a multi-headed defender against the lurking threats of the digital realm. Our internet security solutions, inspired by the mythic Hydra, adapt and evolve to keep your data safe. Dive into the depths of online safety with Hydra Shield. Defend against cyber threats with multiple layers of protection. Stay ahead of digital monsters with cutting-edge technology. Safeguard your online empire with the power of the Hydra. Your safety is our mission. The official platform will be launched in 2024. However, if you are currently being harassed online, please contact us. In a digital world filled with uncertainties, Hydra Shield is here to empower you. If you're facing online threats or uncertainties, our free consultation is your first step towards reclaiming control. Who? Individuals and businesses navigating online challenges. What? A personalized consultation to understand your unique situation. Where? Reach out to us via email at darkmatters777@outlook.com. When? Act now to take control of your safety. Why? Because everyone deserves a safe online space. How? Simply email, share your concerns. Reach out today for a consultation.
New York City apartment. A prostitute offers her client a cocktail before having sex with him. What the man doesn't know is that his drink has been laced with LSD and that the entire encounter is being recorded on film.
Personnel would watch them having sex with the prostitutes while high on LSD through one-way mirrors.
In Montreal, a young mother suffering from postpartum depression is reduced to a vegetative state.
He was trying to drive my previous life out.
In a federal penitentiary in California, a prisoner dies after being given massive doses of a muscle relaxant to suppress his violent behavior.
These were horrendously damaging experiments, and in fact, they just didn't give a damn about the people who were the subjects of them.
These are not scenes made up in the mind of a novelist or a screenwriter. They are recreations of actual events, examples of top-secret mind control experiments funded by the United States government.
This is way out of the realm of fiction or supposition or conspiracy theory or speculation. This is absolute documented fact.
The goal of these experiments is to determine if the human mind can be controlled using outside forces, drugs, electroshock, hypnosis. It is a top secret program that reaches terrifying heights in the 1950s and 1960s, but has its roots in the Middle Ages. In 1484, Heinrich Kramer and James Springer publish a treatise called the Malleus Maleficarum. It describes ways to manipulate a person into confession.
It was, in fact, among other things, a cross-examination manual to extract false confessions from people accused of being witches. Consequently, you have here the systematic attempt to find techniques to get people to report that they were things they were not, or to do things that they would not otherwise do.
It is the first, albeit primitive, step towards mind control as an offensive weapon to be used against an unwitting subject.
The secret of mind control is to change people outside of their awareness, so they do your bidding without realizing that that's what they're doing. For that kind of a technology, you need sophisticated principles either of brain control or of mind control.
Welcome, listeners, to another gripping episode of The Dark Mind Detective, the podcast where we unravel the mysteries that lurk within the shadows of the mind. I am your host, Mark, and today we'll be diving deep into the world of mind control as we explore Dave McGowan's thrilling work, Programmed to Kill. Now, this is not your typical true crime podcast. I consider myself more to be a true crime variety show. So, just imagine a world where thoughts are not entirely your own, where clandestine programs seek to manipulate the very essence of who we are. In this episode, we'll navigate the twists and the turns, the mind-bending narrative, exploring the deep psychological depths, the ethical dilemmas, and the suspense that Programmed to Kill has to offer. Join me as we peel back the layers of this intricate story, the boundaries of free will, and the profound impact of psychological manipulation. Get ready for a journey that will challenge your perception and keep you on the edge of your seat. The Dark Mind Detective, where enigma of the mind meets the thrilling storytelling of yours truly, Mark, your guide through the mystery that lies beneath the surface. Let's embark on this gripping exploration together. What if I told you there's a book that explores the sinister mind control program? Can you imagine characters unwillingly becoming subjects, facing challenges and dangers beyond their control? Have you ever thought about the layers of complexity that the mind control could add to a narrative? Are you ready to dwell into a story that raises profound questions about free will and ethical considerations? Can you anticipate the potential consequences of psychological manipulation? What if you could explore a world where thoughts and actions are not entirely your own? How would you react to such a narrative that dwells into the psychological impact on individuals and society? The term MK Ultra, only one of the many code names used by the U.S. intelligence communities over the years, is commonly used to refer to all CIA-sponsored research on mind control. Perhaps the most contentious theory that listeners in concerns a phenomena known about mind control. Project MKUltra was a covert and illegal human experimentation program undertaken by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, from 1953 to 1973. It involved many individuals who became subject of psychiatric and drug experimentation without their consent. Some of the notable victims of this project include Frank Olson. Olson was a United States Army biochemist and biological weapon researcher. He was given LSD without his knowledge and consent in November 1953, part of a CIA experiment, and died after falling from a 13-story window a week later. Harold Bloor. Bloor died as a result of 5-4-methylene dioxyamphetamine injection, also known as MDA. Whitey Bulger, the notorious crime boss, also a victim of MKUltra projects. Sirhan Sirhan. Lawrence Teeter, the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, believed that Sirhan was an operating under MKUltra mind control techniques when he assassinated Robert F. Kennedy. Charles Manson. Author Tom O'Neill has tied Charles Manson to the MKUltra program, beginning with his time in prison when Manson took part in drug-induced psychological experiments run by the federal government. Stan J. Caterbone. Caterbone is a pro se petitioner who claimed has fallen victim to a criminal civil conspiracy related to MKUltra. Patients of Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron. Cameron conducted MKUltra experiments at the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal. 9 of his patients sued the CIA in 1980 for treatments as part of the MKUltra program. The case was settled out of court in 1988. Patients received compensation, but the CIA did not accept any liability. Ted Kaczynski, also known as a Unabomber, was indeed a subject of the MKUltra program. As a promising 16-year-old student at Harvard University, Kaczynski participated in a study conducted by psychologist Henry A. Murray. This study, which involved brutalizing psychological experiments, was later reported to be part of the CIA MKUltra program. The experiments that Kaczynski was subject to were reportedly harsh and involved verbal abuse, humiliation. These experiments at Harvard span roughly for 3 years and are believed to have significantly influenced Kaczynski's worldview and may have contributed to his transformation into the Unabomber. Kaczynski's involvement in the MKUltra program was disclosed in correspondence from prison with Professor Alston Chase, who later wrote a book about the Unabomber. Chase argued that Kaczynski's experiment at Harvard helped shape his anger and legitimize his wrath. By the time he graduated, all the elements that would ultimately transform him into the Unabomber was in place. Project MKUltra, initiated by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, in 1950, had several primary goals. The overarching object was to develop procedures and identify drugs that could be used for mind control and chemical interrogation. This was largely in response to reports of Soviet, Chinese, and North Koreans' use of mind control techniques on U.S. prisoners of war in Korea. The CIA was interested in using similar methods on their captives and in manipulating foreign leaders with such techniques. One specific goal was to create a Manchurian candidate, a subject through mind control techniques. This involved the use of various drugs, psychotherapy, hypnosis, and other methods to alter human behavior. The CIA was also interested in researching how drugs could promote the intoxicating effects of alcohol, rendering the induction of hypnosis easier, enhance the ability of individuals to withstand torture, corrosion, and produce amnesia, shock, and confusion. The program also aimed to develop a comprehensive capability in the field to convert chemical and biological warfare, which would give the CIA a thorough knowledge of the enemy's theoretical potential. This involved research and development of chemical and biological radioactive materials capable of employment in clandestine operations to control human behavior. Although Project MKUltra started out as a research program to formulate defensive measures against enemy mind and behavior control interrogation techniques, agency officials quickly began to explore offensive measures. The program included several objectives that involved experimentation with various drugs, psychotherapy, hypnosis as a way to alter human behavior. Despite the extensive effort, the program was ultimately deemed unsuccessful in achieving this primary goal of mind control. Sydney patients of Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron. Cameron conducted MKUltra experiments at Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal. A show will be dedicated to these human experiments that took place with the consent of the Canadian government. 9 of his patients sued the CIA in 1980 for their treatment as part of the MKUltra program. As I said, the case was settled out of court. And the CIA, of course, did not accept any liability. So when the majority of people hear mind control, they're naturally skeptical of the idea of someone's unseen. Our Western culture really values the idea of free will. It's very embedded in our culture, so people have a natural skepticism when they hear something like mind control that could be influencing our thoughts, our actions, our behaviors. The basic methodology of mind control was revealed many decades ago by George Estabrook, who was a prominent psychiatrist. He was a prominent psychologist and hypnotist who worked for the American intelligence agencies. He published his first edition of his book, Hypnotism, The Intelligent Reader Will Understand, Estabrook teased his audience in 1943. When I get this book, I will read the important parts so you can learn more, and as an informed listener can construct a reasonable, accurate picture by understanding the fundamentals of mind control. The degree to which any given person is susceptible to mind control is a direct function of that person's susceptibility to what is known as dissociative states, according to the psychiatric community. Dissociate states is the key to mind control. In the book Acid Dream, the complete social history of LSD, the CIA in the 60s and beyond, this is a book, it's a very captivating book that takes you into the journey of LSD history, its ties to the CIA, the cultural impact, the tumultuous 1960s and beyond. I'm currently reading this book, and as I dwell into this comprehensive social history and the revelations about the role of LSD in shaping society, is nothing short of mind-bending. So stay tuned for future episodes as we unravel these mysteries within the pages of Acid Dream. So this is just an introduction, and as I peel back Dave McGowan's great book, Program the Kill, and he starts off the introduction of mind control, and it's the key to how... The book Program the Kill fundamentally made me relook at the typical or the mainstream narrative of serial killers. Many of these narratives of serial killers, when you start doing research on them, things don't quite add up. We'll be exploring mind control, as hence this episode. Also, I have a few goals with my podcast and with my work is one, to archive as much of the interesting videos, things that I find, you know, books, you know, reading from these books. A lot of things are getting lost. Like, you know, I've been researching these topics for a very long time, and stuff that I used to be able to look up very easily is now gone. So I spend a lot of time on the Wayback Machine, and I'll find stuff. So my goal is also to archive this information, the interesting information. Like sometimes I'll find an old documentary from the 1970s, and I'll post it as a way to preserve it, so people in the future can have access to it for research, and I have quite a lot of it, so I've been planning to start breaking it down and posting it. So if you see some strange mind control videos coming up once in a while, it's the key purpose is to archive it before it gets lost. So recently I looked into a folder I collected, and I have 46 one-hour videos from roughly from the 1960s to about the 1980s regarding mind control, CIA experimentation, and things like that. Some of the videos are in really terrible shape, but the audio is in okay shape. So if anything, I'm going to try to preserve the audio, because I think this is very important information, because so much stuff gets lost down the rabbit hole, the memory hole. and then it's lost forever. And I notice that they rewrite a lot of stuff. And as they rewrite stuff, it becomes more and more watered down. And I've been seeing that a lot. And we live in a kind of a strange time. If you're listening to me, I'm in Canada. News is blocked. I've had someone send me today, as I speak, a Wall Street Journal article. Now, Wall Street Journal is a pretty mainstream, reputable newspaper, one of the best newspapers, in my opinion. And I was not allowed to see the article because I'm in Canada. So we live in very, very strange time. So my job really, and I can't emphasize this enough, is one, to tell stories, make interesting story, give you food for thought. I want you, the listeners, to not to be a conspiracy theorist. I hate that term. It gets thrown down. It gets thrown a lot as a pejorative. It's really stupid because any criminal case really is a conspiracy case, right? Especially if they're trying to say a bunch of criminals came together and planned to do something, that's a conspiracy, right? So that term itself has been weaponized to people that are thinking, yes, there are some stupid conspiracy theories out there. I'm not going to get into them right there because I just don't want to deal with trolls if I say I don't believe in this conspiracy or that conspiracy. There are some stupid conspiracies out there. But that being said, there's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of factual information that's being hidden, like even the mainstream news. I couldn't post about a 13-year-old girl that went missing in my community because the news was blocked. I tried to post it over 6 times on different platforms. It was blocked and taken down at every step. That is not a conspiracy. That is a fact. So, like I said, with my platform, I have a few fundamental goals. One, to archive important information, historical information. You, the listener, I believe that you listen to my podcast because you're a thinking person, right? I want to give you food for thought. I want you to see past the narrative that's being fed to you. I'm not telling you to listen and believe everything I say. Do your own research. And if you believe that I put out any information that you can refute, I'll be more than happy to listen to it. So thank you so much. We're going to end it here today. I'm going to do a little bit each day because this is kind of a heavy subject and I want to give you enough to think about, to digest, but too much, it's kind of like digesting like a big pot roast dinner because these are very heavy subjects that have very serious implication. And I hope over time I can build a pretty compelling case that most things are not what you think they are. So thank you so much. My name is Mark. I am the Dark Mind Detective, and I'm honored for you to be listening to my stories and my podcast. I thank you so much. You have a wonderful day.
About LSD and the disastrous effects that it can have than anybody else at the time knew. And they were out there like a Pied Piper or a Johnny Appleseed throwing out money to encourage research in this area.
Mental hospitals are a favorite target for CIA experiments, where unknowing patients are given massive doses of LSD. The studies are so secret that often not even the patient's personal physicians know what is being tested.
What was hideous about those experiments is that they were using a population of people who were suffering from mental illnesses. And then when the people would later report to their psychologists that they felt like their minds were being controlled, this was used as a reason to keep them in the institutions even longer, although technically they were correct.
And LSD is only part of the MKUltra story. Declassified CIA documents reveal funding between 1953 and 1964 for 149 different sub-projects, many of which combine drugs with other forms of mind control.
The basic idea is that you soften up the person's mind, and then you can get in there and use other techniques, which would include hypnosis, pain, electric shock, sensory deprivation and isolation, straight verbal brainwashing and threats to control them and manipulate them however you want. So the drugs were just part of the mix.
In the mid-1950s, the CIA learns of just such a kitchen sink approach to mind control that's already underway at the Allen Memorial Institute at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. There, psychiatrist Dr. Ewan Cameron is attempting to cure mental illness using a process called depatterning.
He had some ideas that if you could depattern the human mind, if you could wipe the human mind completely clean of all thoughts, then you could pattern in new behaviors.
To the CIA, depatterning also has obvious significance for intelligence work. In 1957, they begin funding Dr. Cameron's work.
What Cameron did at the CIA's instigation was to put together a specialized three-step brainwashing experiment, which was conducted on unwitting people, that violated every ethical standard that the medical profession had been formulating for the past 50 years.
In 1957, the CIA begins funding the work of Canadian psychiatrist Dr. Ewan Cameron after reading about his new and radical brand of psychotherapy.
You would basically put somebody to sleep with drugs for many, many, many days, give them massive doses of electric shock therapy, literally hundreds of times the normal dosage, and basically you would reduce the person literally to a vegetable. And the idea clinically was you would wipe out either delusions or depression or psychiatric symptoms, and then when the person came back to their normal self, which would take months and months and months, the psychiatric symptoms would be gone.
This kind of clinically induced amnesia is of special interest to the CIA. Dr. Cameron agrees to take his treatment one step further. In addition to depatterning his client, he would attempt to repattern in new thoughts and behaviors.
The CIA funded this experiment because if you could take a person who was an enemy agent, erase that personality and put in a new personality, you have a convert.
At the CIA's instigation, Cameron devises a three-step brainwashing experiment.
The three parts consisted of, first, what he called depatterning, which was the use of LSD and intensive electroshocks. So that's phase one, is wiping the slate clean. Second was trying to program in new patterns of behavior by playing tape-recorded messages hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times. The final phase was a 2 to 3 week period where Cameron would put patients to sleep using barbiturates to try to suppress any recollection of what had been done to them.
It sounds crazy, it sounds like a Frankenstein type process, but the fact is he was president of the American Psychiatric Association and nobody called his act at the time. In fact, he did it to his paying patients. People paid for this treatment. And unbelievable kind of thing. There were screams coming out of the hospital, that wing. I interviewed nurses and doctors who said, we thought something was going on, but you couldn't question Dr. Cameron.
Between 1957 and 1964, Dr. Cameron conducts his mind control experiments on hundreds of unwitting victims, including Linda McDonald.
Friends have told me, because of, I don't have any memory of that life that I lived, I probably had postpartum depression, but nobody could really pin it down because it didn't last. And so it took about 2 years in and out of my GP's, my general practitioner's office, to finally say, look, we can't figure it out. We don't know what's the matter with you. Why don't you go to Montreal? There's this famous doctor there, and he'll give you an assessment.
In 1963, at age 25, Linda McDonald is suffering from what we know today were classic symptoms of postpartum depression. She goes to Dr. Ewan Cameron for a three-week evaluation.
Within 3 weeks, he diagnosed me as an acute schizophrenic. And he told the children's father that unless the children's father agreed to let me have this treatment, which he didn't go into any detail discussing, then I would be institutionalized for the rest of my life.
It's before we started talking about informed consent notions and so on. The doctor said, do this, you did it.
One of the great ironies for me of the whole Cameron CIA story is that the people who were victimized thought they were going to the finest psychiatric hospital in Canada. Most of them were not suffering from profound schizophrenia or some psychiatric disorder that might justify some of the more intrusive techniques that were used on them. These were people who were suffering from run-of-the-mill common psychiatric ailments.
Only by reading her medical records can Linda know what happened to her more than 30 years ago. It begins in April 1963 with a depatterning program conducted in what Cameron calls the sleep room.
He sent me to the sleep room, and in 5 weeks I had 109 electroconvulsive shock treatments.
And each time she got a treatment, she got six times the normal dose. So that was literally over 600 times the normal dose that you would get in one ECT treatment.
And mega doses of hallucinogenic drugs, LSD included, all at the same time. I had 86 comatose days, deep coma sleep. And when I woke up 5 weeks later, this is according to my file, because of course I can't remember any of this, I was a vegetable. I'd never been in this world before. I was a baby completely. I didn't know who I was. I was incontinent. I didn't know anything.
During repatterning, Linda is dosed with a number of hallucinogenic drugs and depressants while a speaker under her pillow plays a continuous audio loop.
The tape loops that were over and over and over and over were literally for weeks at a time.
He was trying to drive my previous life out, to take it to zero, and the objective was to then put another personality into this vegetable. Now, I don't know whether he succeeded, because I don't know how much of the life that I've lived, certainly in the 10 years after, was being dictated by messages in my head. I don't know, and I'll never know.
When Linda McDonald is released from Allen Memorial 5 months later, she has no memory of life before Dr. Cameron.
At the end of the massive ECT treatment, the depatterning, and so on, she was unable to recognize her husband, didn't know that she was married, couldn't state her own name, had no idea where she was or what year it was.
The children at this time were being taken care of because, of course, I was younger than all of these children. I had a big grown-up body, and chronologically I was 26 years old, but I'd only been in this world a few months.
After her release, Linda McDonald receives no follow-up treatment from Dr. Cameron. Other doctors refuse to take her case.
A lot of doctors knew or had a sense that something very covert and unhealthy was happening at the Allen Memorial with Dr. Cameron, and they just did not want to have anything to do with anybody or any file or any connection.
You got to remember, it's not just that they were used as experimental guinea pigs in untested and damaging experiments. They were denied therapies that could have helped them.
Slowly, on her own, Linda McDonald begins to create a new life for herself, completely unaware of what she now knows about the treatments she received.
The children's father taught me to read and to play the guitar again. I used to know how to do that in the other life. And to drive the car, and my sister-in-law taught me how to cook. She taught me how to scramble eggs, and I was so excited about that.
In 1984, Linda sees an article in her local newspaper about a lawsuit against the CIA and Allen Memorial. The litigants are 9 former patients of Dr. Ewan Cameron.
I'll never forget it, because there was a picture of this man and then this big caption that said, Dr. Ewan Cameron brainwashing Allen Memorial, all over the front page. Well, my heart stopped, because I knew he was my doctor. I knew that's where I'd been. And I started to read. And by the end of the page, I was just shaking. I was absolutely traumatized.
Linda files her own lawsuit and joins over 80 former Cameron patients who will eventually be awarded compensation by the Canadian government. Among the victims is Velma Orlikov, the wife of a Canadian member of parliament. But for every involuntary human subject who is able to uncover his or her role in CIA experiments, experts believe there are many more who will never know.
There's been thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of people subjected to really damaging, unethical experimentation.
And indeed, thousands of people who have suffered as a result of government mind control experiments are probably 99% unaware.
Beginning in the fall of 1963, there is little that can be known about U.S. government mind control experiments. That's when MKUltra is replaced by Project MKSearch, which absorbs many of the ongoing mind control experiments. Dr. Ewan Cameron continues his depatterning treatments until mid-1964, when he suddenly and unexpectedly retires. He dies of a heart attack while mountain climbing in 1967. MKSearch continues until 1972, as do companion mind control projects funded by the Army, Navy, and Air Force. There, the paper trail gets very cold.
In 1972, when Richard Holmes was leaving the CIA, he did a lot of destruction of documents. The mind control records were among those ordered to be destroyed.
In 1975, after President Ford appoints the Rockefeller Commission to investigate past CIA abuses, including their drug program, reporter John Marks begins searching for any remaining CIA documents relating to mind control experiments.
When the climate had changed, because there had been a congressional committees investigating the CIA and the like, I filed this Freedom of Information request, which tried to find these particular records. Somebody out in the archives discovered four or five boxes of records, which were mainly the financial records and with the justifications that went along with them.
It is these financial records that form the basis for what we now know.
I would love to have full knowledge, but those who knew weren't telling, and I took this as far as I could.
I would say we probably know about 30% of what the CIA did. Those experiments stopped, however, in terms of the record available to us in the maybe early to mid-1970s. I don't know any researcher who's had any success in finding anything out about CIA experiments since then.
And we may never know, because what's left of these documents is currently classified.
One of the real fundamental abuses of secrecy in our government still today is the misuse of national security, not to protect information that actually has some bearing on the national defense of our country, like how to make an atomic bomb, but rather to hide misconduct and embarrassment about misdeeds that have been done by the government.
This is not a pleasant world we live in. You know, and there are a lot of nasty people and things in the world, and we need protection from them. But you don't get protection by becoming the guinea pigs of the forces you pay to protect you. And you can't save your mind by having the people who protect you take your mind.
But secrets die hard, and so do the men who keep the secrets.
Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, when I deposed him in Virginia several years ago, he was completely unrepentant. And it's chilling to sit across the table from the man who was the architect of so much human suffering and have him say, I was just a patriot.
One of the great tragedies is that no professional organization has censured any of its members for their involvement in these proceedings. Nobody has lost a job as a result of it. Nobody has lost status or prestige as a result of it. And therefore, the message is, do it, because you won't be punished for it.
And the question remains, is the government still doing it?
One of the things that was interesting during the 50s is they were 10 years ahead of the popular research effort. My guess is that they've tried to stay that far ahead. In fact, they would say they've been irresponsible. They're not doing their jobs well if they haven't stayed that far ahead of the curve.
We know from articles in U.S. News and World Report and a magazine called Defense Electronics that there's a lot of experimentation and development of non-lethal weapons right up to the present. Non-lethal weapons are various forms of energy and radiation, sound, electromagnetic, and so on. They're beamed at a target's head or other areas of the body to control their behavior, make them sick, disable them in some way without killing them.
But is it being tested on unknowing subjects, as it was so abusively in the 1950s?
What we know for a fact now from a wide range of documentation is that there's been experimentation on unwitting civilians involving biological weapons, radiation experimentation, LSD, and other forms of mind control experimentation. Given all of that, it's basically implausible that there hasn't been some experimentation on unwitting citizens using non-lethal weapons technology.
The present speculation has its basis in the facts of the past.
What brainwashing and mind control experimentation have taught us in the 20th century is a rather cruel paradox that for every advance we make in mental medicine, we can take a step backward for people who want to use those advances for purposes of control.
We're using a standard, we're using a prism to judge this stuff that didn't exist at the time. Now, that doesn't justify everything, and there are gross human rights violations available here, but I think at this point it's a chapter that the United States would be better to close.
What we really need now is a really thorough public review of the history of medical and psychiatric contracting for mind control purposes. We need all this out on the table, we need it acknowledged.
Otherwise, experts say, history is doomed to repeat itself and bring to pass a prophecy made by Aldous Huxley in his 1932 novel, Brave New World.
Brave New World said, we're going to voluntarily turn over our minds and our beliefs and our thoughts to people. And Huxley was right. Unless we do something to protect our own individual integrity, or at least our children.
The former head of MKUltra, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, testified before a Senate committee in 1977. He admitted that the CIA had administered LSD and other drugs to people without their knowledge, but insisted mind control was an important part of the Cold War. Gottlieb died in 1999 at the age of 80 without ever publicly expressing any regret for his role in the experiments.